The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
Stand by for the Northern Alliance Radio Network. And go launch sequence. Engineering?
Go flight.
Master control?
Go flight.
Studio engineer?
Go flight.
We are go for launch in T-minus 3, 2, 1. We have liftoff.
The Northern Alliance Radio Network is on the air, live and local from the AM 1280 The Patriot Studios in Eagan. Here is the closer, Brad Carlson.
AM 1280 The Patriot. It is the Northern Alliance Radio Network. Back with another edition of the broadcast we like to call The Closer. That's me, Brad Carlson. Thanks as always for tuning into our show. You can feel free to check out my blog at bradcarlson.org. Yeah, I still do blogging. Bradcarlson.org is the website. You can also follow along at Twitter at Narn Show. That's hashtag N-A-R-N Show. For any comments or questions, and as always, we appreciate you tuning in on this Easter Sunday. For He is risen. He is risen indeed. Definitely my favorite holiday. Where we commemorate the resurrection of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and all that He has done for us. Yeah, obviously I'm going to take the second hour to talk more about Easter and what the holiday means overall. And hey, I'm not opposed to having some Easter candy, Easter baskets, having a little bunny hop around your residence, whatever the case. I like Easter candy, so I'm good with that. But it definitely is more than bunnies and Easter eggs and candy. That is for certain. So we're going to get into that in the second hour. But I do want to address some national topics because, obviously the world rages on. The news goes on despite everything. And I was following along. I don't know if I got to it this past Sunday. It seemed to me it was unfolding kind of the general snit fit that employees of NBC were having over the hiring of Ronna McDaniel as an on-air contributor. Now, Ronna McDaniel, who once went by Ronna Romney McDaniel, because she, for those of you wondering, she is the niece of current Utah Republican Senator Mitt Romney, and of course, 2012 Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney. And she dropped the Romney because rumors have it that Trump didn't like Romney, so he didn't want to be reminded of Mitt Romney. So Ronna Romney McDaniel just went to Ronna McDaniel. Anyways, I digress. So Ronna McDaniel was the RNC chair for 6 years, I think. Whatever the case, she recently stepped down because Trump wanted his own people there, even though his folks worked hard to get her to be RNC chair. And apparently, if you don't pledge complete fealty to Donald Trump, he'll throw you under the bus. Anyways, I'm kind of going in different directions here. Long story short, Ronna McDaniel was hired as a contributor to NBC. NBC news, whether it be Meet the Press or any of the NBC programming, of course, MSNBC, that's kind of that's the medium where it's more conducive to have on-air contributors. So she was hired, and there was a snit fit going on. In fact, I didn't get to this last Sunday, but Chuck Todd, the former moderator of Meet the Depressed, as Rush Limbaugh used to call him, Meet the Press, he was on a panel with Kristen Welker, who is the current moderator of Meet the Press. Now, apparently, there was an interview that was going to be scheduled with Ronna McDaniel, and it was scheduled before she was hired as an on-air contributor. Well, then, as the interview was drawing nearer, all of a sudden, Kristen Welker's in this awkward position of interviewing a colleague. And Chuck Todd, that was a bridge too far for him. And he says, our bosses owe you an apology. They put you in an untenable position, yada, yada, yada. And, of course, people are having just going off the rails saying, why in the world are we hiring a Republican on this station? Someone who spreads lies and conspiracy theories and election misinformation and was associated with the evil Donald Trump, even though MSNBC used Trump to prop up their ratings back in 2016. You remember that? Because Pepperidge Farm remembers. Yeah. Joe Scarborough, particularly Morning Joe, they'd had him on constantly. In fact, MSNBC, when Trump would have a campaign rally in 2016, you know, they would hold a camera on an empty podium, you know, building up to when Trump finally arrives. And, of course, the mindset behind that was they prop up Trump as a Republican candidate. Hopefully he'd be the Republican candidate because he'd be easiest for Hillary Clinton to defeat.
Oops.
Yeah. So they were more than happy to talk about Trump and prop him up when he was in a ratings elixir. But now, all of a sudden, anything associated with Trump, they don't want to have anything to do with. And this just goes to a larger issue here. Is why on earth do you want to have a network where it's just an echo chamber? I mean, I get it. During Trump's presidency, this was kind of therapy for progressives. They could go to MSNBC or CNN and, you know, and engage in Trump hatred and have that as kind of the dopamine hit, you know, where they can have their biases confirmed by these networks. And there was no ideological diversity at all on any of these networks. Yeah, they'd bring in the Republican contributor, but it was an anti-Trump Republican. There were plenty of those that they could scrape the bottom of the barrel. But then they could say, wow, we have Republicans on. Yeah, any pro-Trump Republicans? Well, now you finally got someone who was pro-Trump Republican, Ron McDaniel, and that's just a bridge too far. So, long story short, if NBC News was like a parent, then a number of the on-air personalities are their fit-throwing children. And in essence, the parent gave in to the demands of their petulant kids. They got tired of the kid having a temper tantrum when they said, no, you're not getting any candy. The kid falls on the floor and kicks and screams and has a tantrum and everything else. And the parent, instead of, you know, sticking with their decision, you know, for the good of the kid, says, you know what? Okay, we'll give in. And that's essentially what NBC News has done here. This is from Deadline.com. NBC News has cut ties with former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel just days after she was announced as a paid analyst for the network. There had been a growing internal backlash at the division over her hire. Meanwhile, CAA also has dropped McDaniel as a client, sources familiar with the situation tell Deadline. A source also confirmed reports that McDaniel was seeking potential legal options for her next steps. NBC Universal News Group Chairman Cesar Conde made the announcement about McDaniel's exit in a memo to staffers. In his missive, Conde took responsibility for what happened, but it was unclear whether there will be further repercussions. No organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is cohesive and aligned. Over the last few days, it has become clear that this appointment undermines that goal, Conde wrote in the memo. He added, I want to personally apologize to our team members who felt we let them down. While this was a collective recommendation by some members of our leadership team, I approved it and take full responsibility. Now, I want to go back to a portion of that statement where NBC Universal News Group Chairman Cesar Conde made the comment of no organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is cohesive and aligned. So are we saying that everybody should be as anti-Semitic as Reverend Al Sharpton? Or as bigoted as Joy Reid? Remember the whole kerfuffle with Joy Reid? She wrote a blog that was very bigoted towards the LGBTQ community and later apologized for it, but she was hacked. Yeah, remember that one? Or prone to spreading election disinformation as Little Red Lying Hood? a.k.a. Jen Psaki, has done? Yeah, because Jen Psaki put out that, disseminated that tweet during the 2020 election cycle about the, how the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. No, it wasn't. And another thing, people are saying, oh, that just seems a little too familiar. Someone that has worked closely with a presidential administration all of a sudden coming in and is a political commentator on a network. You do realize that you have literally someone who worked for a presidential administration as a press secretary in Jen Psaki, now a host on your network. But you see, this is no more complicated than the fact that Jen Psaki reinforces the progressive narrative and worldview. So, of course, she's welcome. Okay, but these people think you're stupid. They think you're stupid. And just to kind of, now, I got a sound clip. Spencer, we have this ready. This is cut number one. So we have a montage of different NBC and MSNBC personalities talking about the Ronna McDaniel hire and how they are, well, I'll just let it speak for itself. So, Spencer, do we have that ready? Okay. I'll just let it kind of speak for itself here. This is cut number one.
The fact that Ms. McDaniel is on the payroll at NBC News, to me, that is inexplicable.
I have some thoughts about Ronna McDaniel and the normalization of the dangerous, damned lies from the Republican Party.
She is a co-conspirator and an enabler.
An anti-democracy election denier.
She lied to the American people to further the autocratic movement that is Trumpism.
She dropped the Romney from her name, apparently, because Donald Trump hates Mitt Romney.
How does that feel? To change your name to curry favor with a madman.
We weren't asked our opinion of the hiring, but if we were, we would have strongly objected to it.
And I hope they will reverse their decision.
We hope NBC will reconsider its decision.
And this is not about not having Republicans on.
Right.
My good friend Michael Steele is the former also RNC chair.
If you are going to be on American media, you should be somebody who believes that there is something called truth, that there are things called facts.
You wouldn't hire a wise guy. You wouldn't hire a made man like a mobster to work at a DA's office.
It goes without saying that she will not be a guest on Morning Joe.
Ronna McDaniel would not appear on our air.
Ronna McDaniel will not be on our air.
Our sacred airwaves.
Ronna McDaniel will not be on MSNBC.
The viewers of this platform in particular for at least 8 years have found a home here for conversations around protecting democracy. And what they saw in the hiring of Ronna McDaniel is a decision to bring on board someone who's a liar.
So there you have it. I've got a lot more to say about this and react to this, but we do need to take a break. We'll be back with another segment on this Easter edition of the Northern Alliance Radio Network with me, Brad Carlson. Again, feel free to weigh in via Twitter at hashtag NARN Show. That's hashtag NARN Show. And back in mere moments with the broadcast. Go nowhere.
Touch this. Can't touch this.
AM 1280 The Patriot.
Can't touch this.
Northern Alliance Radio Network with me, Brad Carlson. Thank you as always for tuning in. It's a special Easter edition of the Northern Alliance Radio Network. And hope you are enjoying this special holiday with your family, your loved ones, your friends, whomever you may be with on this day. Again, feel free to weigh in via Twitter regarding any subject we discuss at hashtag NARN Show. That's hashtag NARN Show for comments or questions. And again, we always appreciate you tuning in. So I want to continue my insights, my opinion, if you will, on NBC dropping ex-RNC chair Ronna McDaniel as a contributor literally less than a week after she was hired. I played a montage of the likes of Rachel Maddow, Nicole Wallace, Joy Reid, Joe Scarborough, and Mika Brzezinski, the various MSNBC and NBC personalities. And it's basically a template for leftist program. Well, what are you talking about? It's not that we don't want Republicans on. My good friend Michael Steele, who was the former chair of the RNC, appears on this program. And he's anti-Trump. There is the issue. That's the point. You only have on Republicans that are against the current standard bearer of the Republican Party. That's the whole point. But they think you're stupid. And here's my thing. We're not going to have anybody on here that spreads lies about democracy. You mean like citing a false report of former intelligence agencies saying that a story that would have hurt Joe Biden in 2020 was Russian disinformation? Oops. Because one of your own personalities, the former press secretary of the Biden administration, I might add, Jen Psaki, she disseminated that political report, which turned out to be false. And for Trump's first 2 years in office, MSNBC was balls to the wall every day and night, practically fondling themselves over the prospects of the Mueller report coming out and saying Trump was a Russian asset and colluded with Russia in order to win the 2016 election. And it was complete bullpucky, and there was evidence to suggest it was bullpucky. Now, that's not to say Trump wasn't a complete buffoon, and Trump did things behind the scenes that shouldn't happen in a presidential administration, but he was never a Russian asset. And to traffic that Steele dossier report, that Steele dossier, like it was sacred truth, even though it was pretty much debunked from day one, and yet MSNBC ran with it night after night, week after week, for literally 2 years solid, until the Mueller report finally came out and said, yeah, you know, there were some things that happened, but Trump was not a Russian asset, and they still wouldn't let it go. But yet you suddenly found your moral compass, huh? Well, we may tell lies, but there are lies. There are our lies to tell. And look, Ronna McDaniel was set to be a contributor. That's it, a contributor. A contributor is someone who appears on a show and gives their perspective. You know, the Republican perspective. And typically all these primetime shows, whether it's Rachel Maddow or Lawrence O'Donnell or Chris Hayes, these people appear on weeknights. And then, of course, Morning Joe with Joe and Mika appearing obviously early mornings in MSNBC. If Ronna McDaniel were to appear on any of those programs, she would be there as a contributor, either on a panel or one-on-one with the host. And since all of these hosts are overwhelmingly leftists, if Ronna McDaniel said something that was objectionable, then call her out on it. If nothing else, have her on and shoot down her worldview for sport. If it's just so simple to say, well, she just traffics lies, great. Then be the arbiters of truth. Show your viewers how it's done. Show your viewers how you beat back the evil Republicans and their democracy-destroying rhetoric. At least do it for sport. At least, you know, get the dopamine hit of owning the cons. So you got to ask yourself, why don't they take it on as a challenge? Why don't they say, you know what? This hire was made, and she has some pretty dangerous viewpoints, but you know what? The hire was made. It's beyond our pay grade, and if she appears on this show, and if she says something that we feel is objectionable, it is our duty as the moral arbiters of truth. Sorry, cracked myself up. That's how they think of themselves, but it still makes me laugh. It's our duty as the moral arbiters of truth to call her out on her lies. Because think about it. If she appears in a panel discussion, you have probably three or four other panelists. Probably all of them are Democrats. They're all going to gang up on her and call her out. Or if she appears one-on-one with Rachel Maddow, come on, Rach, show your intellectual prowess. But instead, we don't want her on this show. She will never appear on this network. It's almost as if you don't have the intellectual chops to beat back some of the things she's saying. It's almost as if you're building straw men, saying that she fomented some sort of election denialism. Which, did she? I don't know that she personally ever did. I you know, my thing is, I don't give a lot of credence to those who deny the results of the 2020 election. Okay, we don't need to go down that road. But I don't know if she personally ever did. But the fact that she stayed RNC chair during the Trump era and in the aftermath of Trump, she did, I don't know. But my whole point is, if she appeared as a solo contributor on one of the primetime programs, again, all hosted by far leftists, then any of the program hosts should be able to successfully rebut her commentary. And is there a better, more effective way to poke holes in objectionable worldviews than through intellectual discourse? The fact the network brass would rather acquiesce to the thumb-sucking TV hosts who don't want her on the air as a contributor, that says to me that they're not all that secure in the validity of their personality's talking points. You know, because you're just shouting into a leftist echo chamber. Well, in the end, these NBC and MSNBC personalities, you know, they can high-five each other for standing in solidarity against the hiring of McDaniel, while also continuing to receive the proverbial dopamine hit that occurs when shouting into their echo chamber. But there are behind-the-scenes employees who actually have to live in the real world, and thus there's repercussions for this whole debacle. And this is from a website, semaphore.com. Now NBC staffers are bracing for Republican backlash, fielding texts from angry GOP sources. Political reporters here didn't take part in the backlash, nor did they give input on the hire, one NBC News journalist said. But they'll be the ones who have to pick up the pieces with sources who are now dismayed with the organization. Four NBC News staffers expressed concern that instead of fixing the problem, hiring and then firing McDaniel had only alienated liberal viewers while confirming Republican fears. Two Republican aides told Semaphore they'd texted their NBC News contacts to express their anger with the decision. So for a collective that got the vapors over when then-President Donald Trump referred to the media as the enemy of the people, they sure as heck work overtime to give off that impression, at least towards the 74 million plus people who voted for Donald Trump in 2020.
Well, enemy of the people, that's denigrating our industry.
Well, again, what other impression are people supposed to get if you have that much of a snit fit if someone who has a different worldview than you comes on your network? I mean, did you hear? I don't even know who that was, but during that sound montage, we shouldn't let her on these sacred airwaves. My God, what a bunch of thumb-sucking little whiny babies. I almost said something else. It's pathetic. And look, I wouldn't have watched MSNBC whether McDaniel was on as a contributor or not. I don't care for those networks where it's just people shouting each other or shouting over each other. It's really not productive. People tune in for their echo chamber. You know, that's really what it's all about. Heck, I remember showing support for Fox News hiring Donna Brazile. Donna Brazile, Democrat, operative, formerly worked in the Bill Clinton administration. And I had listeners to this show call in and say, we should have Donna Brazile on Fox News. It's like, when did this happen? When did this happen where we're supposed to not be subjected to opinions that don't align with our worldview? When did this happen? You know, it's kind of like physical exercise. We do things that we don't want to. When we're lifting, you know, we're getting resistance against things that make us comfortable. But guess what? We're better for it, right? When we're lifting weights. And it's the same thing, I believe, with your intellectual prowess. If you're not using it to reaffirm your worldviews or take in new information that makes you kind of assess your worldview, then you just get stuck in this little bubble. And that's how we are today, where we're so divided that we talk past each other. We don't listen to each other's discourse. I mean, my thing is, I'll watch different videos and whatnot of leftists opining on something, and I can acknowledge when they have a point, But a lot of times, because I believe what I believe and have been intellectually honest about the right of center, where I typically reside politically, I feel as though I can take in new information with an open mind. And as a result, over the years, over my 20 years of commenting on politics, whether it be through my blog, bradcarlson.org, or the nearly 13 years I've been on the Northern Alliance Radio Network, I feel as though my world view has only been more enhanced as a result. So, again, this is just kind of an overarching problem in the news media, in our universities, for crying out loud, specifically the universities. These young people aren't being subject to things that fly in the face of their worldview. And at a young age, 18, 19, 20, as these university students are, their worldview should be developing, evolving. But instead, they get entrenched in a certain worldview that their leftist professors are teaching them, and there's no opportunity for discourse. I mean, I know a lot of my fellow conservatives who went to leftist universities who said that was the best thing for them, is to be able to have discourse with these leftist professors. And these professors actually weren't hostile toward them. Now, it just seems a very, very hostile environment. So I've been saying for a long time, this is not a good place to be in our discourse. And that's why the 2024 election, I don't have a lot of, let's just say, I don't have a lot of hope for productive and dignified discussions. And it's a shame. It really is. Brad Carlson, the closer on this Easter edition of the Northern Alliance Radio Network. Back in mere moments with another segment on the broadcast. Go nowhere. Hey, welcome back. AM 1280 The Patriot, Northern Alliance Radio Network with me, Brad Carlson. Thanks as always for tuning in. This Easter edition of the Northern Alliance Radio Network. Thank you as always for joining us. Feel free to check out my blog, bradcarlson.org, and don't forget to weigh in via Twitter if you desire to do so. Any aspect of the show you'd like to comment on, just use hashtag NARN show. That's hashtag NARN show for any comments or questions. And as always, we thank you so much for tuning in. I'm going to transition now to our guest today on the broadcast. Paul Tice is the author of a new book entitled The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System. Mr. Tice is a longtime Wall Street, employee of Wall Street, and has written this book to kind of sound the alarm of ESG investing, something, a terminology people might have heard of, but doesn't know exactly what it entails. And of course, we've heard about sustainability investing, which again, people may have heard the terms in passing, but not really understand what they mean or what the potential repercussions could be. So we are honored at this time to welcome the aforementioned Paul Tice. Mr. Tice, welcome to the broadcast today, sir. How are you?
Hi, Brad. It's good to be with you.
So did I have your credentials right? Longtime employee of Wall Street. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, recently called it a career after 40 years working on the street. So that is correct.
Very, very nice. Very nice. Well, again, we did mention the title of the book, The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System. Of course, for those who may not know, ESG is an acronym for Environmental, Social, and Governance. Mr. Tice, if you maybe want to give us just kind of a broad overview of how that fits into the financial world and maybe kind of give us some insight of what is sustainability investing?
Sure. So, you know, a lot of these terms are interchangeable. So ESG investing, sustainable investing, responsible investing, they all are used kind of interchangeably by activists. But ESG is basically, as you say, it's environmental, social, governance, and these are factors that, as the argument goes, should be used to drive your company policy and your investment decision making. And these are all non-financial factors. They are morally subjective. And, you know, basically the goal is to replace the objective financial metrics that we've used up until now, again, with this new moral prism. And it's all based on the theory of stakeholder capitalism, which says that your companies should be run for the good of society as opposed to the owners and the capital providers and the employees. And that may be the end stage of capitalism if we don't turn this thing around, but it's clearly not capitalism. It's basically the government working through activists to direct the private sector and the financial markets, and that is basically the definition of fascism.
Yeah, now we've heard also terminology, you know, you kind of talk about interchangeable phrases. We've also heard the terminology woke capitalism, and we've heard about, you know, the term woke being used more often where it's not so much a meritorious system or, like, say, a capitalistic system as opposed to, I don't know, how they're defining it. But basically the factors that are normally used for fiduciary responsibility are used when investing. So I want to ask about that in specific. Say, you know, you have folks who are they've compelled the services of a financial advisor and they're investing their money in, say, a 401k or whatever else. And the financial advisor invests their money accordingly in, say, aggressive stocks. Is this something that is where an investor is adversely impacted, someone investing in a 401k that they don't even know the kind of companies they're investing in? Why don't you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so, I mean, the problem with ESG is that it's kind of aggressively come on over the last 10 years, you know, even though you could see the track record over the last 40 years. And all of this is being led by the United Nations primarily. You know, they are the lead on climate change, sustainable development, and ESG investing is basically the third leg of the stool. So it's not surprising that, you know, the leading ESG activists on Wall Street is the United Nations Principles for Responsible Investment Group. And every Wall Street firm is a member of that organization. And with that membership comes requirements, including you have to integrate ESG into all of your existing assets under management. It doesn't matter if they were raised to target a sustainable strategy or not. And most of the assets that are under management right now, roughly 97% to 98%, were not raised in order to go after sustainability. So there's a huge fiduciary problem that I don't think people are aware of. But this has been creeping in to investment decision-making aggressively since 2015 when the UN passed the Paris Agreement and the Sustainable Development Goals. And now ESG is defined as you need to align with both of those UN programs.
Yeah, obviously, if someone is investing their hard-earned money in a company, they're doing so with the mindset of, hey, we want the greatest return on our investment. And I know there's been government officials. I don't know if this was something specifically that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis may have addressed. I don't recall, but it seems to me there were some governors around the state who were looking into this very seriously, basically saying, well, they're not adhering to their fiduciary duty to the investors, and this is something that we may want to address. And then, of course, the argument from the other side is like, well, this is capitalism at work. You can't government shouldn't be interfering in how a private enterprise, you know, conducts its operations. So from that standpoint, Paul Theis, is there any role that, say, a more conservative, capitalistic type of electorate could address here?
Yeah, no, and I think it's good. Some of the red state pushback, including Florida, but, you know, I think we need to not just stop there. There are other things that Republicans can be doing. You know, I think we should just step back and acknowledge that ESG is progressive politics. The other side would like to shut down any discussion by saying anyone who criticizes it, it's just being political, right? And we should just acknowledge that, you know, it's progressive politics masquerading as finance. There is no proof that following a sustainability program will lead to financial outperformance, either for your company or for your investment portfolios. And that's not through any lack of trying, because there's been a lot of research published by business schools trying to prove that case, and it has consistently failed, mainly because ESG, you know, if you think about it, could capture every aspect of a company under one of those three pillars, especially the governance one. And I think that's thrown in there to kind of, you know, just obscure the discussion, because governance is a key to any investment in any company, right? So it's kind of the foot in the door for the rest of the program, and most of the program is focused on climate change, which is how they define the E. But it's a huge fiduciary problem because there is no financial outperformance that you can point to, And the other side just says, well, it'll create long-term value. They never tell you how long it takes to get to that point. The problem is, or at least the other side, I think, acknowledges that issue, and they have slowly been changing their argument to say, well, it's not about absolute return, it's about risk-adjusted return. So if you use ESG as a risk management framework, you know, you're going to get better risk-adjusted returns, which is just going to be lower returns that you can feel better about. And then even that is kind of starting to weaken, and now they're saying, well, it's all about impact. We have to gauge impact, not about return. And impact is going to be measured by how much capital we throw at companies that we favor and take away from companies that we don't, particularly oil and gas. And, you know, then it's going to be the private sector markets will function like the government, because with government, you measure performance by how much money you throw at a problem,
right,
not solving the problem.
So why, in your estimation, has this what's called ESG orthodoxy received so little public resistance? Specifically, your folks like yourself who are on Wall Street, certainly our alarm bells are going off when you're seeing this trend. And it just seems like not enough people know about this, because I would have to say, Paul Tice, if enough people knew about this, there would certainly be a lot more outrage and resistance expressed towards this. So why, in your estimation, has there not been a lot more pushback?
I think the other side has been very good at shutting down any sort of criticism of it. And one of the reasons why I wrote this book is because, you know, during the last 10 years of my career, you know, I obviously had a different opinion about what was going on, but I was not able to actually voice that still working in the industry.
Right.
So cancel culture is a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes CEOs that run companies who are afraid to speak out. And it's also CEOs on Wall Street. Not every Wall Street firm is a firm believer like BlackRock, right? There are many more CEOs, I would argue, who are afraid to speak out, because the way ESG works is you become the next target if you don't stick with the program. So I think we need to understand that ESG is totalitarian in approach. Everyone's under pressure. And in order to get rid of this problem, we need to relieve the pressure that's being placed on the market by third-party activists, you know, led by the United Nations and the World Economic Forum. But it's been coming on the last decade, because initially after the crisis in 2008, Wall Street had an image problem, obviously.
Yeah, right.
And so they needed to signal their virtue. And so ESG came along at right the opportune time. It allowed them to signal that they were virtuous and they were focused on the environment and society. And it suckered everybody into the trade. And now they can't find the exit door. And the problem going forward is that regulations are coming down the pike, which are going to make this all mandatory. And you're already seeing that here in the U.S.
Once again, we are joined by Paul Tice. He, the author of The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System. Mr. Tice, we appreciate you joining us. I guess one final thing, and before we let you go, you did indicate at the outset that despite this very sobering analysis that you're bringing to us today, there is some hope, maybe for some pushback to beat this back before we reach a point of no return. What can you share for us on that front, Paul Tice?
Yeah, I mean, my goal in writing the book was, you know, obviously ESG is a problem. So, you know, the first step towards solving a problem is acknowledging you have a problem and actually the depth of that problem. So that was the main goal here. And I do think the argument that I lay out in the book will resonate with a lot of people working on Wall Street who are really the silent majority. So I think that was the initial goal. I think if people focus more about this and talk about it, you know, and state obvious truths and not be afraid to do that, particularly around climate change, I think there will be strength in numbers, right? The other side has benefited over the last 20 years, shutting people down around climate science, and it's the same tactic that they're using around ESG. So in terms of how do we reverse this thing, it's going to take government resources. You know, I think individuals, everyday Americans, obviously should allocate their dollars when they're consuming or they're investing to firms that align with their interests. So that's easy. And some of the red states have started to do that with their business. But in order to reverse this thing, we're really going to need government resources, particularly at the state level, to lead the legal charge. Because the problem that we have with climate change and ESG is that these regulations have come into play without any sort of democratic process, right? It's
right.
been behind the scenes. You know, I think Americans are intuitively aware of it, but, you know, the financial market piece with ESG is probably the biggest threat to the fossil fuel industry, away from all the other regulations you're getting out of the current administration. So I think Americans need to focus on that and place pressure on their Republican lawmakers at the state level to lead the charge. And I'm very optimistic based on the ruling in West Virginia versus EPA,
yes.
which rolled back the Clean Power Plan. That same precedent and argument needs to be applied to all the rules coming out of the SEC, the Federal Reserve, the Department of Labor, which is designed to redefine the fiduciary rule, because, as you mentioned, that is a problem for ESG, and one way to get around that is just to change all the regulations. So, you know, we need to have, you know, a lot of lawsuits flying, honestly. And we also need to talk about this more publicly and not be afraid to question the climate science, because ESG, my argument in the book, away from the woke capitalism, which I think are important, I'm concerned that people may dismiss ESG as just another culture war skirmish.
Yeah.
And it's not. This is different, and we need to focus on ESG and what's going on with climate, and then keep pushing about all the climate regulations, too.
Paul Tice, the author of the book, The Race to Zero, How ESG Investing Will Crater the Global Financial System, a must-read if you're very concerned, obviously, about the financial system of our country. Mr. Tice, thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great rest of your weekend. Happy Easter to you and yours, and we appreciate the time, sir.
Thanks for having me. Happy Easter.
AM 1280 The Patriot, Northern Alliance Radio Network with me, Brad Carlson. One final segment this hour. Go nowhere. Hey, welcome back. AM 1280 The Patriot, Northern Alliance Radio Network. Happy Easter to you and yours, for he is risen. He is risen indeed. Hope you're enjoying your Easter holiday. Whatever I want. Again, it's me, Brad Carlson, the closer. Feel free to check out my blog at bradcarlson.org. And follow the broadcast along on Twitter. Just use hashtag NARN Show. That's hashtag N-A-R-N Show for any comments or questions. And as always, we thank you for tuning in. Only got a few minutes left this hour, but I did want to at least talk about the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. Of course, as you know, by now, it was early Tuesday morning. We were woken with the news that the cargo ship Dolly crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge. There were several people that perished. Again, it was like 1:30 in the morning. So obviously it could have been a lot worse, but nevertheless, there was loss of life. And even if there's just one life lost in an accident like this, it's a tragedy. But kudos to the highway department workers that were working on the bridge, saw what was unfolding, saw what was happening, and rushed to tell people not to get on the bridge because of what was taking place. And a lot of those highway workers, transportation department workers, lost their lives because of that, because they heard the Mayday call from the ship when the ship's power went out and went adrift. And, you know, with all of the cargo containers stacked like they were, operated as kind of like a sail, you know, and with the power having gone out, they couldn't steer it properly. So these highway workers that ended up perishing in this collapse, they're heroes because they saved lives and they risked their own and subsequently lost their own lives to save other lives. And for that, they are to be commended. And we certainly mourn their loss, as I'm sure their family members and all their loved ones do today. But as with any tragedy, there's always an element that comes out and starts with the most outlandish, worst-case scenario of why this tragedy occurred. And one of the things that came out that was prominent amongst elements of the right was, well, that's what you get with DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, when you hire someone based on the color of their skin and not whether or not they can do the job. That's what happens. And the local pilot steering the ship, from what I understand, had 10 years of experience and saved countless lives by issuing this Mayday call. And thus, it allowed workers that were on the bridge to clear the bridge and saved a lot of lives. And there are others who say, well, it was hacked. You know, this there was a cyber attack. We should have Greg Scott on to talk about this. I think this would be a great topic. He won't have much to add to it because there was no cyber attack. Okay? Again, my understanding, this ship was built in the 70s, so it didn't have the internal mechanism to even be hacked. And some are calling it a terrorist attack. Again, if this was a terrorist attack, those who are committing the terror, they have a tendency to take credit for their work, don't they? So why would all of a sudden they be covering up? Why would they go under the guise of trying to keep the ship from crashing by dropping anchor? I really am exasperated by any tragedy that takes place in this nation. Doesn't matter if it's the far elements of the left or right. The immediate inclination is to politicize it and come up with outlandish and, by the way, disproven conspiracy theories, impossible theories. But then they go, well, we don't trust the government to tell us the truth, so what are we supposed to think? Well, you don't really trust them to tell you when things are good. And if things are good, it's not because they're telling you, right? So, long story short, don't do that. Don't go to automatically the worst case scenario. It's stupid and it's not productive. Hour number one in the books. Hour number two coming back in mere moments on this Easter edition of The Closer of the Northern Alliance Radio Network with me, Brad Carlson. Back in a few. Turn all of
the lights on. 3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.